Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at a number of UK equities after we dissect the key market themes out there at the moment. And to do that, we have with us once more, Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Morning again, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, I mean, how are you finding things out there this week in markets? We're obviously looking at a situation on the FTSE 100 where we had quite a sharp rally at the end of last week on some weaker than expected inflation data from the United States. CPI came in below analyst estimates. But we've actually seen this morning here in the UK what appears to be a divergence in the paths of inflation here in the UK and in the US. We've got a massive beat on the upside, 11.1%. That's the highest reading since the 1980s. So, you know, in an environment such as this, Alan, you know, when you're sort of looking at UK equities, you know, if you look at FTSE 100 companies, of course, there's, you know, a lot of overseas companies where this data wouldn't have too much of an impact. But there are the house builders, there are some of the retailers that are feeling the pinch this morning. And of course, if you look at the 250, there's lots of casualties out there. You know, do you think this divergence between the UK and US could be a cause for concern for some domestic facing stocks in the UK if it continues?
Yeah, I think it is. And obviously, we've just also heard from Barclays as well, which has cut its global growth forecast of 2023. Predicting the weakest growth in 40 years, you know, so it is a concern. And of course, we were talking before we came on air about the consumer facing stocks like house builders down, because of course people are looking at the numbers and looking at the increase in the cost of living and cutting back spending or making plans to cut back on spending, because with that sort of backdrop and outlook, you've got to readjust your plans accordingly. So, of course, that will have a role on impact into house builders selling houses, lenders, of course, providing financial products, mortgages and so on. It's going to have considerable ramifications. Then we still have the known unknowns of the energy costs ongoing. Are those going to spike again? Obviously, the Russia-Ukraine conflict has ratcheted up a notch overnight with the missiles landing in Poland, although Biden, I noticed, distancing himself from it and saying that those were fired by Ukraine. I believe they were sort of taking out the incoming missiles from Russia. So it was a tragic accident. But we, of course, you know, that's yet to roll out. And we have this cocktail of uncertainty, a wall of worry to climb, if you like. So and ironically, as we speak at the moment, the FTSE 100 is, of course, continuing to do that. But bearing in mind, of course, the FTSE is largely exposed to global dollar earners. And of course, the dollar is still holding up fairly well.
So, I mean, that the dollar situation is quite interesting, because that strength in the dollar, if we do start to see further economic turmoil and geopolitical risk, you could see strength in the dollar, which sees weakness in the pound, of course, and supports the FTSE going forward. Mm. So, you know, we discussed previously, Alan, that there could be a situation early next year where the FTSE 100 is breaking or very near all-time highs whilst the UK is actually in a recession. There's a number of factors at play.
Yeah.
Obviously, looking at what's happening in China, if we see a reopening in China there. So, you know, would it be a case that, you know, you have to really get your stock picker's hat on in that case? And, you know, what sort of sectors do you think would be the ones to have a look at?
It's a really tough call, isn't it? Because, of course, given the way events are evolving and developing and rolling out, you know, what we're talking about today could be entirely irrelevant tomorrow. It's just the way the markets are evolving. But certainly, I think with China coming out of lockdown, and I think there are Xi and Biden, of course, have had that meeting. It was fairly frosty by all accounts. But I think going forward, Xi is probably looking at what's happening in Russia. And I think they're keeping their hands in their pockets at the moment. But my guess is that if the situation with Russia, Ukraine continues and Russia continues to further isolate itself from the world, Xi may well throw his hat in the ring with the West. Of course, that remains to be seen. But that, of course, China is a huge consumer of raw materials. So that does paint a fairly bullish backdrop, I think, for the large global mining entities such as Billiton and Vale and Rio, of course. So I think in the commodity sector, we're still looking pretty strong going forward. Then, of course, you've got tech companies as well. You know, Vodafone's a global owner, so Vodafone's going to offer some decent opportunity going forward. And then, of course, technology. Whilst technology stocks have been hit in times of conflict such as this, technology evolves, and there's no better place to look for that than within universities, where work and projects are being spun out into the commercial sector. So there's a lot to play for. Domestically, of course, we have those challenges. We're going to look at one domestic stock this morning that probably is a bit more, offers better defensive qualities than some, but certainly it's, as you rightly say, John, stock picking at this juncture in time is a very key part of any investment strategy going forward.
Indeed. So let's move on to that first company that we're going to look at today, Alan. It's SSC. This has been one of my favourites for, probably the best part of 10 years now. It was always one that paid a reliable dividend. It was a good one to trade because it always rallied up into the ex-dividend date and fell, a significant amount and then rallied back up again. It did that for a good few years. That sort of trading pattern's broken down slightly since, but still a very good dividend player. So SSE had their half-year report out this morning. Alan, what were the key takeaways from that?
Well, I think one of the things going forward is that SSE has stated very clearly in today's statement that it's going to support customers, which as a utility, it should be doing. So it's great to hear it reiterate that and put that message out there. Nonetheless, we've seen a bit of a recovery in the share price, bounce off year low of £14 per share, and it's now trading at £16.20 per share, year high of just under £20 per share. But at this level, it's paying a dividend of 5.3%. So that's still something that's worth considering. And I think the fact that it's going to support customers is great, but of course, as an investment proposition, is that what we want to hear going forward? Certainly, on the back of the news this morning, the shares have dropped slightly, down 1.5%. The numbers aren't particularly good to see. Adjusted earnings per share of 41.8p, although it was in line with guidance. But it's focused on its net zero acceleration program. Of course, this is investment into clean technology to get to becoming a net zero or a net positive entity at some point in the future. It's also generated first power during the period at its Sea Green offshore wind project, expected to go commercial in summer next year. It's also developing Dogger Bank and Viking projects. The company isn't just focused on the UK, it is focused throughout Europe and into other entities. So it's certainly not just a UK focused stock. I think the worry for investors going forward is that these profits will be sacrificed in order to support customers. Of course, in the UK, there is the cap where there is some government support for the power providers to do this. But I think, certainly if I'm looking at this stock now, it's a hold going forward. I'm not sure I'd be adding at this level, but certainly SSE has a track record of delivering solid results to customers. It's going through this evolution into a clean energy net zero company. The chief exec said today, Alistair Davis said today, they're investing $12.5 billion in the next 5 years. That will take the total to probably over 25 billion in this decade in the UK and Ireland. So a big supporter of clean technology, and it's going to become wholly reliant on that future. And of course, the good news is that when you get entities like SSE making those commitments, it does eventually mean that we will be weaned off our reliance for gas from Russia. So that's got to be a good thing. And I think other companies will be working towards that net result too. So clearly going forward, the less reliant we are on Russia for that, the better it's going to be for all concerned.
Indeed. Of course, there's the upcoming risk of the windfall tax coming in. That looks like it's going to be around sort of 40% or so, but it's a very delicate balancing act with companies such as SSE because, you know, they're the ones to invest in a greener future for our energy mix. But at the same time, the government needs to raise some funds from somewhere, and they're seeing extraordinary profits on their energy generation due to the rising prices. So it's becoming a target. But that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out early next year in SSE's next update. So moving on now, Alan, we're going to be touching on a company here that you're mentioning about technology. This is a listed company, Frontier IP Group, invests in technology. So would you be able to go into some of their key projects, please, Alan, some recent updates from them?
Most certainly, yes. So Frontier, of course, we've spoken about IP and tech in the past, John, and we've looked at, we've of course looked at Tech Capital, which effectively does the same thing, focusing on the university network throughout the world, where you've got projects or university projects spun out into the commercial sector, and in some cases those projects are taken all the way through and become listed on stock exchanges themselves as separate entities. So this is what Frontier IP do. So currently the company has a market capitalization. It's AIM listed, of course. Market capitalization of about 42 million, so in the same area as Tech Capital. Year high of 117 pence, year low of 56 pence, just off those year lows now, coming back off the October lows at 56p, currently trading at 76p. And, you know, with good reason. I mean, the company's enjoyed huge success over this year. The net asset value is currently 90 pence. So we're trading sort of well below that. But a lot of the value has been driven by its success in bringing these companies through to market. So in terms of the companies it's involved in, it's involved in healthcare. It has automated fruit picking technology, AI, drug discovery, and that was particularly an important cornerstone for the Frontier IP portfolio. A company, Exscientia, was listed on NASDAQ. It was listed at a much higher market valuation than had been initially thought, and what that resulted, what that meant was that the company, from an initial investment of $273,000, a part disposal by Frontier IP following the listing generated cash of £6.5 million. So that's a spectacular return on investment. And this is what Frontier IP does. As I say, it has investments into graphene, investments into solar technology. In fact, one of its companies, Pulsive, recently announced it had raised $1.5 million in that fundraise. So of course, certainly for Frontier IP, that actually gives a significant uplift. In fact, I will just say, I'll just correct myself there. It's actually Pulsive where Frontier IP invested an initial 273,000. So going back to Accenture, certainly that's generated a spectacular return for the group, but I don't have the numbers on the initial investment there. So across the range of IP, if you go to the Frontier IP group and look at the portfolio, there's a company called Fieldwork Robotics, Elute Intelligence software tools to analyze data and documentary and documents, antibiotics, as I say, AI in logistics and supply chains, and a raft of other companies, all spun out of university. So it's got Frontier IP has a pipeline of companies coming to market, attaining value, or maybe becoming involved or in a trade sale at some point down the road. But it's a very it's a fund that invests into university spin outs, and of course as we know with tech capital, for instance, they have a huge network throughout the world. Frontier IP is a very similar company, and I think it offers good resilience. Certainly, if you're invested into early stage companies that are spun out of universities, I think there is some data somewhere which indicates that the percentage success rate from those companies is generally higher than those not being spun out of university IP. So there's some pretty solid data supporting the group there. So in the company also recently announced final results for the year. Net assets, as I say, just around 90p at present, so trending under that. Earnings per share up 6% to 18.6p, up from 17.5p the previous year. The group increased pre-tax profits by 6% to 10,879,000. So that's a pretty good return over the year. The company continues to expand and invest in new tech going forward. So well worth a look. I think every investor should have a company like this within their portfolio for exposure to new IP, new technology going forward.
Yes, I mean, certainly looking through the portfolio here, there's a big range of technology that they're investing in. So, you know, if you're interested in innovative new solutions for solving problems, there is a broad range of companies here which are looking at various different things, as you've outlined there, Alan. If anything, it's just quite interesting to see, you know, some of the solutions that they're looking at. You know, obviously sort of there's wastewater treatment and, you know, the implications for that as well. So definitely worth having a look at their website. If anything, just for, you know, further insights into technological advances that we're seeing at the moment. So, Alan, now we've gone to the final stock that we're going to discuss today. You know, the company here, looking at the chart, it's had a tremendous 6 weeks. You know, going back to the beginning of October, we're looking at a share price around that 4.5p level. Today, it's trading at 9.5p. It's Paul Begg Pharma. What's been the driver behind this?
Paul Begg's had a tremendous few weeks, but I mean, even now we're just coming back to or approaching the IPO price from when the company was spun out of Open Orphan, which of course is now hVIVO, last year. But headed up by Jeremy Skillington, the company, its model is, it's a capital light model which develops IP and develops drugs and biotech solutions to phase one, phase two level, and then once it has them to that level, of course, as we know with biotechs, they achieve a new benchmark of valuation. At that point, it then negotiates and talks to the big pharmas like Pfizer, Solvay, and so on, then the IP is then shared with that company, who come to shareholders, and they fund the big money to take it through to commercialization. So it's a very strong model. They have POLB1 and POLB2, of course, which are being developed in the pipeline. Also some great collaborations with Anabiotechnologies, using, you know, we mentioned with Frontier IP just now, using AI in drug discovery, and certainly a step forward was taken in the past few days by the group in that regard. But I think the big step forward was announced yesterday. The company announced that EncoVac, which is a consortium led by Paul Begg, was awarded a €2.3 million grant to progress its oral vaccine program under the Irish government's Disruptive Technologies Innovation Fund. So the collaboration is with Anabio Technologies, Trinity College Dublin, and the University College Dublin. It's a big step forward. It's real validation of the model that that Paul Begg is developing. And I think we're also awaiting a lot of data from POLB1 and POLB2. Clinical trials in the next few weeks, and I think we're going to be seeing some big steps taken by Paul Begg as we go into the new year. Also very important to note that Chief Exec Jeremy Skillington has been involved with the company from the start, and he's very much got a track record in this area. He developed and bought through was sold to Roche Pharmaceuticals for some $400 million a few years back prior to joining Paul Begg Pharma. So the company's at a very exciting juncture in its evolution. Lots of clinical data due in the next few weeks and also in the new year as well. So lots of news flow ahead. And I think we're seeing the rise in the share price off the back of that. And I'm sure, you know, Paul Begg's going to have a very strong and successful 2023.
I mean, so looking back, I mean, the IPO price for Paul Begg Pharma was actually 10p last year. I mean, what do you think the market's looking for here, Alan, in terms of a catalyst to get it above that level? Because it spent most of its time as a listed company beneath that level. Do you think there's some anticipation about further results, or is it the commercialization of what they're looking at, people are waiting for?
I think it's simply that, John. With any biotech company, it has to go through the process where it develops the drugs, undertakes the trials, and then the data comes back, and then it's moving to phase two, and then of course the next steps that are taken. And as I say, driving last week, we had the news that it's an AI program with 1-3 Biotech for its RSV, respiratory syncytial virus treatment, has identified novel drug targets using the challenge trial data and artificial intelligence. So it's a real milestone for the group. And I think again, you know, the company comes to market, you know, sets its stall out. We understand what it does, but of course it has to then go through the process of bringing those drugs through and reporting those results to the market. And we're now seeing some very strong results. The model that the company set its stall out by originally is working and is developing nicely. So I think we should, you know, once we get the next set of data, we're going to see, I think, some significant moves higher. The company's still valued at just 49 million sterling. And for a biotech company engaged, you know, when you're looking at these drugs in development, some of them are worth billions at, phase two and phase three clinical trial levels. So you've got a really important... some really important drugs being developed by Paul Begg. So I do expect to see the valuation gap redressed in the not too distant future.
Fantastic, fantastic. Surely an interesting one to keep an eye on. So just as a wrap up there of the stocks we discussed today, SSE first up has a ticker, of course, of SSE. It was then Frontier IP Group, which had a ticker of FIPP. And just then was Paul Begg Pharma with a ticker of POLB. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks very much, John.
So just a note before we finish the podcast today, we've got the next instalment of our virtual conferences coming up in early December. On the 7th, there's a couple of companies there, both in differing sectors. So do check out the events section on the UK Investor Magazine website, where you'll be able to find a link to get yourself signed up for that. And we hope to see you there. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.